Inside Florida Politics, the essential political podcast powered by Gatehouse Florida. I'm Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, coming to you from our studio in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'm joined, as always, by Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson.
Hey, George.
And returning to us this podcast from Tallahassee, the state capitol bureau chief for Gatehouse Media, John Kennedy.
Hello, George.
Well, this is the special post-primary hindsight edition of Inside Florida Politics. We got a lot to cover from the Andrew Gillum shocker in the Democratic primary, the Ron DeSantis blowout, and all kinds of stuff to cover. So let's get right to it. So we have the governor matchup between Republican Ron DeSantis and Democrat Andrew Gillum. And one of the things you hear is that each party got the opponent they were hoping for, that Republicans really wanted to have this, far left Andrew Gillum as their opponent. And Democrats were eager to make this a referendum on Donald Trump and run against the Trump endorsed Republican Ron DeSantis. So each party got what they were hoping for. And there's a there's a conventional wisdom that after a primary that the candidate, you run to the right in a Republican primary, you run to the left in a Democratic party in a Democratic primary, but then you try to move to the center in the general election and appeal to these voters in the middle. Certainly, you hear that a lot, but I'm not sure if that's going to be the case this time. Let's play a couple of audio clips here. The first one, Zach Anderson, you interviewed Andrew Gillum a week before the election in, where was this, in Sarasota?
Yeah, this was on his bus while he was going across the state, and he stopped in Sarasota in Newtown, which is a historically African-American community, and had a little rally where people were getting them fired up before the primary here. And I spoke to him on his bus about his strategy and why sort of Democrats who might be sitting on the fence about him, why they should be considering supporting him.
Let's hear what Andrew Gillum had to say.
We have nominated five pretty centrist Democrats, white Democrats, for the last 20 years, and not one of them have won. And I supported every one of them and would have wanted either or any of them to be the governor of the state of Florida. But don't hold me to a standard that you didn't hold them to.
Right?
We're qualified, we're prepared, we're ready. And I believe our candidacy offers the unique ability to attract the very voters who have eluded us in these midterm elections. Black voters, brown voters, young voters, corporate voters. I trust my chances at being able to reach those constituencies over anybody else running. And if we're going to win, our nominee must move more of those voters to the poll. I'm confident in my chances at being able to do that.
There you go. So Andrew Gillum saying, hey, we tried the centrist approach five times and Democrats lost each time. So he's saying, hey, let's take a chance on a guy who is going to motivate, fire up the base. And lo and behold, Democratic voters did that on Tuesday. Now, then we're going to play a clip. This is Ron DeSantis in West Palm Beach. I talked to him on primary eve. He was very confident about winning the next day, which he did. And I asked him about, President Trump endorsed him and was a huge factor in him winning the Republican primary. And I asked him, well, what role do you think President Trump will have in the general election? Here's what Ron DeSantis had to say.
I think he'll come down when we get closer to voting and really help drive the turnout. I mean, these midterms are about mobilization. You got to mobilize your people. And obviously, he has the capacity to do that.
So, people might consider President Trump a polarizing figure to voters outside the Republican Party, but Ron DeSantis is saying, hey, he mobilizes the base, and that's what this election's about. So you really have two guys who are really hoping to fire up the respective bases in their parties, setting up an interesting election. And we're going to talk an awful lot about that. But first, I think I hear some royalty-free music playing. kind of some funky royalty-free music, and that means it's time for our Pick a Number segment, a tradition here on the podcast where we each of us puts forward a number, and then we talk about the significance of it later. John Kennedy, what is your number?
George, my number is 229.
229, okay. John Kennedy coming in with a 229. Zach Anderson, your number, please.
My number is 7.75. A little bit unusual there.
Very precise number, going two digits to the right of the decimal point. Zach Anderson bringing a 7.75 to pick a number this week.
And I'll give a hint. Number, it has to do with Andrew Gillum, if you want to go and Google that
okay,
right now.
Wait, the idea is to keep the listeners engaged till the end when they hear that.
Yeah, no extra hints.
Music again.
Are we going to talk about how your number, George, was just right on the money last week?
Believe me, we are going to talk about that. But first, my number for this week also has a decimal point in it. I'm going to go with 88.6. So once again, listeners, if you're maybe you're in a car or something and can't take notes while you're listening to the podcast. So just to remind you, John Kennedy in Tallahassee has brought a 229 to pick a number this week. Zach Anderson with a 7.75. And my number is 88.6. And we'll get to those numbers later in the podcast. But now let's return to chewing over some of these primary results and their implications for the November general election. Zach Anderson, let's start with you. We mentioned that Andrew Gillum represents kind of a different approach for Democrats after nominating these kind of I-4 centrist Democrats. Tell us a little bit about how different Andrew Gillum is.
Well, you heard that clip, George, where he was making the case that he is the candidate who can really motivate the base, which Democrats have really struggled to in midterm elections over the years. And the reason that he's saying he can do that is not only because he is the first African-American candidate who has ever been nominated for governor, but also he is, you know, the most progressive candidate that has ever been nominated for governor, at least in modern times. You look at some of his positions and he is, talking about impeaching President Trump. He's talking about abolishing ICE. He's talking about raising taxes. He's talking about Medicare for all. These are positions that really get progressives fired up, and he's arguing that he can bring them out to the polls, and we'll see.
And most of those, if I'm not mistaken, the governor of Florida is really not in a position to abolish ICE or impeach the president. Why bring those up, do you think?
Because those are issues that Democrats are paying attention to. And you make a good point, George. Those are not things that he has any control over, but this election has become so nationalized with Trump involved, with Bernie Sanders endorsing Gillum, that really people are really paying attention to a lot of these big national issues, and Gillum really used that to try and motivate folks.
Yeah, if there's any doubt about how nationalized this election is, I mean, the third largest state in the country nominating its first African-American nominee for governor was big news, certainly. And the morning after the primary, President Trump weighed in on Twitter, calling Andrew Gillum a failed socialist mayor. So, that certainly nationalized it if it wasn't nationalized already. John Kennedy, your thoughts on the direction that the Democratic Party is going in by nominating Andrew Gillum?
Well, it is a roll of the dice for the Democrats in that, because Florida just seems to be a reflexively more conservative state. We don't really get a feeling that across the state there is a mass pool of progressive voters out there wanting such things as as Zach outlined that Gillum has been talking about. So, you know, can it make a difference? Going back, though, with the Obama successes in Florida, the fact that he carried Florida twice shows that if you do motivate minority voters, younger voters, Hispanic voters, some of that, you know, the Obama coalition that was out there, it is possible to win. I mean, even in Florida, going back to some of the five centrist candidates that Democrats have nominated for governor in the past 20 years, as Gillum would point out in his soundbite there, I do recall, for example, the 2002 governor's race when the Democrats were trying to unseat then-Governor Jeb Bush. There was a lot of feeling that Janet Reno, the Democrat who lost to the eventual nominee Bill McBride, that Janet Reno may have been the better candidate for driving a voter turnout in November. She didn't get that opportunity, but Reno was beloved by black voters and women voters, and that may have made a difference. Instead, McBride was pretty handily defeated by Jeb Bush.
Democrats have been talking about this for years, about motivating the base. So if nothing else, this is going to be a fascinating political science experiment to finally see, you got your liberal candidate. Is this person actually going to bring more voters to the polls?
I think, you know, the Obama example, you know, after Obama won the state in 2008, I remember the Democrats were optimistic in 2010, based on all these new voters that Obama had brought out. And lo and behold, a lot of those folks did not vote in the midterm. And you know, it was again the case in 2014 midterm. Without Obama on the ticket, a lot of the Obama coalition was not engaged and interested. But Andrew Gillum, I think, you know, there's definitely the potential to draw some of those voters. And it appears anecdotally, and I haven't seen the hard numbers yet, but I know Gillum and some of the groups that were supporting him were definitely targeting what they call low propensity voters, you know, who don't normally vote in midterms. And so, you know, if he is successful in bringing out those folks, then you know, it could be a different story than it's been for Democrats for the last two decades here in governor's races. Now, and so obviously, you know, the historic nature of Gillum's candidacy being the first African American nominee in Florida. If there was any question about race being an issue, I think, you know, the morning after the primary, Ron DeSantis. We're going to play a clip here of what Ron DeSantis said on Fox News about, and he was highlighting the, you know, some of the liberal positions that that Zach outlined that Gillum advocates. But here's the way he put it.
The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases and bankrupting the state.
So, his use of the phrase monkey this up, which, have either of you guys ever heard that expression before?
Yeah, it's not usually a way you would characterize, you know, screwing something up.
Right. So his use of that was immediately pounced on, and people said, you know, that it was that there were racial overtones to that. DeSantis denied it and through a spokesman, and then finally went on Hannity later in the evening to say that it had zero to do with race. But, you know, certainly a lot has been said about it, and I don't know what more we can add about it. But let me just ask you this, each of you guys, how big a deal do you think this will be? Is this going to be a lingering issue in the general election? What do you think, Zach?
Well, it's definitely not the way you want to start off your campaign, and whether he meant it or not as a racial issue. And obviously he denies that there was any racial overtones there. It's just one of those things where people are going to pounce on it. People are going to talk about it, and you don't want to be characterized that way. And it's interesting, you know, he's very much tied to Trump, and Trump obviously has been accused of being racist. And so we're seeing some of the same fault lines already developing in this governor's race that we're seeing from the 2016 election.
And I agree. I think, you know, if there was anything more that needed to be done to motivate minority voters in this state, it's that kind of crack as you start the campaign, whether it was inadvertent, which I guess is possible. You know, another statement that DeSantis made as part of that statement was describing Gillum as a very articulate candidate or a very articulate leader. Veiled, but something of a racial code in a way to kind of diminish a black candidate, I think.
Yeah, often kind of can come across as kind of a patronizing when you call somebody.
Exactly.
Articulate. I thought, you know, and then so DeSantis then, you know, went on Hannity, you know, in the evening. And I don't actually think he did himself. I don't think Hannity did him any favors because, you know, he gave DeSantis a platform to say that I think his quote was that this had zero to do with race. But, you know, I think a reasonable follow-up question would be let's assume it did have zero to do with race. Do you recognize that using a term like that is offensive to a lot of people? You know, I think he could have asked him that, which, you know, Hannity, it was just kind of a softball interview and didn't even follow up with that. You know, I'd be curious to hear how DeSantis responds to that. You know, the chairman of the Palm Beach County Republican Party, Michael Barnett, who is black, and I think he's one of only two black Republican chairmen in Florida. And Barnett was actually a Putnam supporter in the primary. But Barnett said, you know, it was a poor choice of words, but he doesn't think that DeSantis is a racist. But, you know, I mean, DeSantis at least, you know, hasn't been asked yet or, you know, hasn't acknowledged that perhaps it was not even the best choice of words. I mean, I seriously doubt he's going to use that term again, but he hasn't really been asked in greater depth about it. So that's certainly a tone setter for this, for the general election. But let's go back and talk a little more about the primary. And obviously, actually on both sides, I mean, I think DeSantis was clearly the favorite, but he ended up winning by a bigger margin than a lot of people predicted. And, you know, Zach and I in the last podcast talked about the so-called pollster primary of, you know, to see which pollsters got it right. Zach, which pollsters got the Democratic race right?
Pretty much none of them. I mean, this was wild. Gillum was never in the lead in any poll that I saw. He was always third, or I think maybe the highest he was ever ranked in a poll was around second. So for him to win and never have led in any of these polls is just remarkable and something of an indictment on pollsters.
Right. And, you know, so St. Pete polls over the day before the election released a poll that did show Gillum gaining, but that poll had, and St. Pete polls uses a pretty large sample. I think it was 2,000 or more likely Democratic primary voters. They had Graham at 31.7 and Gillum coming in second at 25%. And that did represent a big gain for Gillum, but still, I mean, they had him, you know, 6 or 7 points off the lead. And, you know, most of the other pollsters had the race had between Graham and Levine had them being close. And, you know, the only pollster that did get it right actually was Change Research, which is the internal poll that you know that the Gillum campaign released, but they had a week before the election they had Gillum up 33-22 for Graham and 22 for Levine.
On the Republican side, George, it's worth pointing out that a lot of the public polls that came out in the last few weeks seemed to show the race tightening. I mean, there was a number of polls right. That had Putnam within a couple of points of DeSantis, and DeSantis ended up winning by 19 points, which is just embarrassing for those
pollsters. You know, I'll tell you who really nailed it. DeSantis ended up winning by 19.9, I believe. And there's some audio of one guy that was pretty on the mark. Let's play that.
And he's now leading by like 19 points.
There you go. That was President Donald Trump a week before the primary saying that DeSantis was leading by like 19 points. I think 19.9 is pretty much like 19. That's pretty within the margin of error there. So really,
do you think that's grounds for Mueller to question Russian collusion possibly in the Florida election, that Trump is calling the Republican primary so precisely?
Maybe expand to his investigation to Florida results. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking, you know, I think the biggest lead that I saw anybody giving, and again, I mean, the DeSantis winning was not a huge surprise. I saw, you know, Gravis Marketing had a poll that had him up 12 right near the end. But a lot of other polls, you know, nobody was giving him that big a margin. So, you know, certainly a note of caution, I guess, in going forward in the proliferation of polls that you're going to see, and probably a note of caution to us in the media that, I mean, it's certainly fun to talk and write about all these polls coming out, but
I think I would say too. I think it also clouds polling for this coming November election, because again, if Gillum is successful in drawing low propensity voters out, it's going to be very unreliable if polls are not capturing those voters at this point. You know, as they do their surveys, I think, because I was talking to a political scientist yesterday, Daniel Smith at the University of Florida. And he was raising the question about the idea that what is around right now is the narrative that Gillum's victory is basically a late surge, you know, that he had a lot of voters coming over to his side in the closing days before the election. And maybe that's not true, because maybe those voters were there, but pollsters just were not capturing them in their surveys.
Yeah, I will be curious when in the next few days, for example, when we see the breakdown. I know, like in Palm Beach County, it's not available yet, but you can see how they did in early voting and mail-in voting and election day. You can break that out, and I'll be curious to see if there are any significant differences there. Now, one thing, you know, there's been a trend over the last several election cycles in Florida towards more and more people voting before the traditional election day. And so in this election, the number of people I'm looking, more voters cast ballots before August 28th, the traditional election day. More people cast ballots before that day than on election day, I think. And I'm looking among Democrats, about 58% of Democrats who voted did so before Tuesday. About 57% of Republicans cast their ballots either early or and by mail. So, you know, we continue to see this, the notion of election day as the, you know, the kind of final showdown. You know, really the election takes place over several weeks, and therefore, you know, candidates have to spend more money to communicate, and takes more time. What about the turnout numbers? What jumped out at you guys about, you know, there's been all this speculation about a blue wave and about and whether the primary is indicative of that for November. What did you guys notice in the turnout for this primary?
Well, I think what I saw, statewide turnout was higher, 27%, which is the highest level for any Florida primary since 2002. But when you look at the partisan races for governor, Republicans, 35% cast ballots. That's more than the 31% of Democrats that did. So that kind of raises questions about that blue wave. You know, the Democrats are very happy with their turnout, but I think it does raise some questions. I mean, Republicans still had 100,000 more voters in that governor's race than the Democrats did. So the Democrats are happy, you know, where they stand right now, but it's almost like they are saying it. They're happy in relative terms compared to how badly they have performed in previous midterm elections. This primary, they actually did pretty well, and they're close to the Republicans.
Yeah, getting.
I mean, instead of saying we suck, it's kind of like we slightly suck here. And the bottom line is that if more Republicans vote than Democrats, the candidate, the Democrats are likely to lose. So it doesn't matter how much you increase your turnout. You've got to, you know, beat the other side in raw numbers. But there is some, you know, some bright spots for Democrats in these numbers as well.
Sure. Yeah. So just for comparison, back in 2014, the last midterm primary, Democratic turnout for that featured the Charlie Crist Nan Rich primary. Only 18% of Democrats turned out for that, and compared to about 31% this time. So they definitely were a lot more engaged for this race than they were for the Charlie Crist Nan Rich primary. I'll tell you what's interesting is back in 2014, also though, in the primaries, Republicans really didn't have a very competitive race that I remember to really inspire voters, but their turnout was 24% for that. And this time it was improved to 35%. So, you know, it would definitely at the very minimum, both parties seem to be a lot more engaged than they were 4 years ago, certainly. So,
Democrats I spoke to yesterday, you know, we're talking about that disparity and kind of like, well, yeah, you know, but the Republicans always do better in the primary. I'm thinking, well, you know what? The Republicans in Florida always do better in the general election, too.
Yeah, so maybe the last, you know, five governors. Right.
Yeah. If that's your benchmark, you're not going to win this year either. So I wouldn't put a lot of confidence behind that if I was a Democrat right now.
And I think it's really hard to sort of suss out how much of this is increased enthusiasm with the base and how much of it is just the fact that you really have very, very competitive elections on both sides. There haven't been competitive primaries for governor on both sides in a long time. These were both extremely competitive races. Five candidates on the Democratic side, all of them credible, two very credible candidates on the Republican side, and people were motivated to come out and vote. If you give people choices, if you give them competitive elections, they're going to come out and vote in bigger numbers.
There you go. Well, we're getting a little short on time here, but any other big takeaways you get from these primaries in a sentence or two? Start with you, John.
Well, I think one guy that woke up very happy on Wednesday morning was Democratic Senator Bill Nelson, who has been in a very challenging race against Republican Governor Rick Scott, who is trying to unseat Nelson. But the idea of having a black nominee for governor in Andrew Gillum is certain to drive minority turnout in this state. Also, there's an attorney general candidate on the Democratic side, Sean Shaw, who is also black, and he too won the nomination on Tuesday. So that Democratic ticket across the board is going to be relatively diverse and one that drives a level of voters that maybe it was not seen or expected before, and it's certain to help some for Nelson.
There you go. Zach, anything else jump out at you?
Well, it was another bad night for the political establishment on both sides. You saw Adam Putnam, who was sort of a darling of establishment Republicans in this state for many years, tagged to be governor from a early age. And he went down just like Jeb Bush and other establishment Republicans. And then on the Democratic side, more surprising, having Gwen Graham, who was sort of political royalty as well. Her father was governor and U.S. senator, and she lost, which is more shocking. The Democrats have typically, you know, been more willing to go with the establishment types like Hillary Clinton. So to have the Democrats starting to embrace more of this anti-establishment Bernie Sanders style politics is, I think, a big sea change in Florida politics.
Definitely. You know, the other thing, I mean, with Gwen Graham, you've had this whole national narrative, you know, the year of the woman, and female candidates doing well in a lot of Democratic primaries around the country. And in Florida, I think traditionally, you know, 60% of Democratic primary voters are women. And Gwen Graham certainly appealed. You know, she frequently mentioned that she's a mom and a former PTA president, but you know, that did not, and in a five candidate race where she's the only woman, that it seemed like she had a kind of structural advantage, but obviously did not work for her.
And one thing that's been mentioned, George, is that she really got pummeled by Jeff Green and Philip Levine with negative ads, and I think some from Gillum supporters. Gillum really benefited from the fact that she was considered the front runner for a long time, and that she was attacked extensively throughout the race. And people have questioned whether once the fire is trained on Gillum, if he'll be able to take the same type of attack. So we'll see.
Yeah, that was, that was my one observation. Gillum was able to, but because he was low in the polls and in fundraising, he was not targeted by any negative ads the way Graham certainly was, and the way Levine and Green were kind of beating up on each other. But there was no, TV ads aimed at Gillum, and you know, certainly that's not going to be the case in the general election. I might hear some of that royalty free music playing again. Yeah, that's it. That means it's time to return to our pick a number segment. And you may recall,
also known as the George gets to gloat from last week, pick a number.
Well, we I don't know if we even have time for my gloating, but let's talk about those numbers that we picked. Now, Zach, who had 229? That was John Kennedy.
That was me. Yeah, I went very high.
What, 229? Now, what does that number mean?
Well, 229 is my rounding of what Jeff Green spent in this race per vote he got. Green spent $34.8 million, and I think still counting, to finish fourth in the Democratic primary. He only got 152,000 votes, 10% of the returns on the Democratic side. So that wound up being about $229 he could have given every one of his voters.
I think maybe, I don't know what the rates are at the Tideline Resort and Spa that he owns in Palm Beach, but maybe off-season, he basically could have given everybody a room at the, I don't know.
One night only.
Yeah, that's an interesting number. Okay, very good, very good. 229. Zach Anderson going two to the right of the decimal point with a 7.75. Now, what can you explain that number for us, please?
So 7.75 is the corporate tax rate in Florida that Andrew Gillum wants to go to, up from 5.5%. He wants to do that so that he can raise $1 billion to fund public education. It is very unusual for a candidate in a statewide election in Florida to be running on a tax increase. And it's actually the point that Ron DeSantis was trying to make when he got himself in trouble with the monkey comment, was that, he was going after Gillum over being a socialist and wanting to raise taxes and saying that he's going to turn Florida into to Venezuela. I think we're going to hear a lot of socialism comments. I think that's going to be a big buzzword from the DeSantis camp in this election. That word has lost its meaning to some degree. People have different definitions of it, and it's not as big of a boogeyman with younger voters as it once was in politics. But the point being that Gillum is trying to raise taxes is a valid point, and it's a very unusual position for somebody in a statewide race.
Yeah, ask President Walter Mondale about running on a tax increase platform. Okay, very good, very good. Well, and you may recall then that my number was 88.6. That is the percent that Rick Scott got in his primary. You may have forgotten that Rick Scott actually did have a primary for Senate against frequent filer Rocky De La Fuente, running for his third time in 2 years with three different parties. Rick Scott got 88.6% of the vote, which is a blowout kind of number. But it also means, though, that 11.4% of Republicans did not vote for him in a Republican primary. And you wonder, does that have any implications for the general election? Although I did look back, and when Rick Scott was running for re-election as governor in 2014, he also had one or two primary opponents. And in 2014, he got 87.6% of the vote. So there is, you know, there's, it looks like there's some stubborn 11 or 12% of Republican voters in Florida who don't like Rick Scott, or at least vote against him in primaries. But just something to keep in mind in what is inevitably going to be a very close Senate race this fall. All right. Well, we have we've come to the end of this podcast, and so we hope you've enjoyed it. Again, I am Palm Beach Post staff writer George Bennett, and I've been joined by Zach Anderson, political editor of the Sarasota Herald Tribune, and Gatehouse State Capitol Bureau Chief John Kennedy in Tallahassee. Thank you.